SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Santa Anita, Breeders' Cup 2019, a very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, have to talk about that in a second. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And I mentioned that about Sirius. We learned a lot yesterday about satellite technology. There was the weirdest thing. Apparently, about 15% of radios, 15% that are somehow serviced out of the Atlanta engineering. I didn't even know there was Atlanta engineering. Had some issue yesterday, and you know we got like a smattering of people saying, are you not on the channel? And it affected apparently certain kinds of radios and there are obviously we all have different issues and with the different kinds of Sirius radios you could acquire over the recent years. It was really interesting. So later in the day, because we were researching, engineering was confused, and then they got to the bottom of it. And I think that they know what happened, and hopefully 100% of you are hearing the discussions today. 3 hours, and we have to look back before we look ahead, because yesterday, as soon as we got off the air, in addition to researching the engineering, the word came that Maxfield was being withdrawn, being, you use whatever term you want, demurred, declared, really, especially after having talked to Brendan on the fly on Monday. Feel terrible for Godolphin, but everybody very stoic and understanding of the situation. He just, yesterday, they just did not like the way he was traveling, and in fact, they kind of broke off things and brought him back to the barn, and it didn't take too long for the decision to be made, and the diagnostics will continue. Something in the right front was just a miss. And nothing obvious, and no initial issues that were immediately apparent that normally would be. So no choice but to pull back and wait with Maxfield for some of the even bigger goals ahead. I don't want to say bigger goals because Breeders' Cup Juvenile, obviously a big goal, but there will be plenty of opportunities down the road. So Maxfield comes out, and that leaves us with the field of eight for Friday for the juvenile for the feature. And I thought one quote in particular, the Dale Romans, I thought he was the horse to beat, and that was very gracious of Dale to say under the circumstance. And Baffert talked about being very sympathetic, knowing what it's like when American Pharoah couldn't participate, which at the time Baffert felt was the biggest disappointment of his career. So Godolphin plays on the biggest stages, and Jimmy Bell, actually, I thought his quote too was appropriate, where he said it's hard but it's easy. Then maybe 45 minutes later, word circulated that Doug O'Neill was taking the same precautions with Landeskog, and his situation, even more of a murky, just not 100%, just doesn't like the way the horse was acting and just didn't feel like he could go into the race. If he was going to be less than 100%, they're not going to participate. And Doug O'Neill, I thought same thing, just You can't even call it erring on the side of caution. It's just taking the appropriate precautions. So you can take Landeskog, who was the eight, out of the sprint, and Abel Cedillo, obviously disappointed from that standpoint, and loses a mount, but leaves us with nine, and Imperial Hint moves in one, and Matera, and of course with Whitmore now lining up next to Imperial Hint, that's kind of notable because, and I hadn't thought about this until now, looking down at the list, that puts Imperial Hint, you know, a jump into the race with Chancelot to his inside. And Landeskog, who himself, you know, was going to contribute, certainly, to the pace, and now, with him, you know, out of the lineup, you do get the sense that Imperial Hint, depending on how Castellano wants to play it, now gets a chance to kind of stalk and sit off the hip of Chancelot. Interesting. And, of course, Matera Sky and the suggestion made yesterday that, you know, who was I talking to? I guess it was to Andy. He's not so convinced that Matera Sky is going to be able to keep up with the likes of Imperial Hint and Chancelot. So, two developments, obviously, that affect things. Clearly, I mean, Landeskog, as nice a horse as he is, you didn't necessarily have him heavily involved in your sprint considerations, I wouldn't imagine. And Maxfield, the much bigger, bigger story. And I would imagine that, you know, for those that are putting things together, the two horses that move up in everybody's considerations, not everybody's, but, you know, depending on how you're looking at the race, I would say that Scabbard, of course, you know, becomes the other horse with eight rings and Dennis's moment. And I still feel like I'm going to involve Storm the Court, excuse me, in some way, shape, or form. So we'll get everybody's added insights as the next couple of days unfold and into Friday's juvenile action. And as I said to Jennifer Hoyt, who I saw earlier this morning, and I said, well, let's hope that we can keep everybody from this point on. That there's nothing more frustrating than and disappointing, really, than getting this close to, you know, these kinds of opportunities and having a problem and having to withdraw once things have already been established. So we'll establish a lot of international conversation, I think, today, and plenty of pedigree, too. Kelly Riley, we're going to talk to Kelly from Brisnet/Twinspires. She put together, in fact, Ed brought this up with Ed on Friday. She's put together a 30-page report addressing every single international participant. And she basically walks through their background, their race career, their preferences for footing and styles, and we won't go over all of the international entrants. Don't want to take away her thunder from all the work she did. But it, as always, she is so thorough and does a beautiful job. So we will look forward to a Kelly Riley visit. Pete Fornatel. Pete's going to swing through. Pete's going to come out this morning and sit in for for as long as he wants. Sid Fernando, top of hour two. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid, speaking of international, he wrote a piece that used LaForce, actually, as a focal point and talked about German breeding and its placement in pedigrees and, you know, what it brings to the party. Generally, Maduro, and you think of the hardiness that, you know, the German pedigree influences that they are generally acknowledged to bring a hardy, rangy. I think there's a lot of acknowledgement that you fold some German blood into the into your breeding and you get, you know, a dose of hardiness. That's probably the last bit about, you know, bone density, bone, you know, things like that. I do remember that, and was warded off years ago by Alan Schuback to not fall into the trap of always saying that the German pedigreed horses love soft going. I remember that was always a pet peeve of Alan's, and he would go crazy if you brought up the soft going and how the German horse was would get over it. He said that's an old wives' tale. Scott Hazleton from DVG is going to swing by, and I put out a request to Rich Migliori, and hopefully we can get Mig in with him. And of course, the two of them were so good together. And whenever I have an opportunity to have Rich and Scott talk together, we do it. And hopefully, Rich, he might be out attending to the barn duties at his place. So as soon as we hear from Mig, we'll maybe confirm. And also, when I said international, Nick Luck at some point. And if we're not sure if it will be today, if it's not today, it'll be tomorrow. And of course, always the potential for a drive-by. In fact, speaking of, you know, some of the drive-by visits, saw Carlos Martin first thing this morning, and Carlos on hand for Come Dancing. I told him, you know, very excited for Carlos to have this kind of an opportunity. And as we discussed yesterday, in fact, feels like, you know, she's got a real chance to impact the filly and mare sprint. One of the things I want to do today, tomorrow, and into Friday, I want to also talk about the favorites and, you know, the vulnerabilities, the ones that, you know, people are viewing as reliable, as the ones you're going to lean on, and the ones that you want to take a shot against. And after the draw on Monday, you know, people have now had a good, you know, 24 hours to, you know, really absorb the way the races are going to unfold. So we'll do some of that as well. And Mike Welsh, I got to get to Mike. And I did acknowledge the tweet. I've got to reach out to Gary Young because people are very curious how Gary made out yesterday on the golf course. So we'll get an answer there. I love it. We're going to take a break and come back and set up with Kelly Riley. And as we do that, I want to get in a couple of pieces of news, just because, you know, the industry and things continue to happen aside from here, obviously. There was a notable meeting on Monday. The Kentucky Drug and Research Council, which, you know, is an underpinning of the KHRC. And in fact, as I go to talk about this, there's Frank Angst from Bloodhorse, who I think wrote the piece that I'm going to reference. The Drug and Research Council refused to not approve, but to recommend the proposal about the Lasix phase out for Kentucky, and a 5-3 vote, and most notably the the five that voted against are actual veterinarians who deal with actual horses. And the recommendation, the in one direction or another, isn't, anything that necessarily demands the KHRC follow. It's, the recommendation is a recommendation. But the concept, not being recommended for approval by the Drug and Research Council group. So we'll see how that plays out. And of course, this all comes from the missive from earlier in the year from the Stronach group and their suggestion and exhortation to the rest of the industry to follow them and their attempts to change the narrative from what was happening here. So, program announcement for Turfway, too. And also out of that meeting, I should mention one extra day for Kentucky Downs. So they'll have 6 instead of 5 days. Turfway, with the terrific the purse boost we had heard about and had kind of assumed with Churchill's involvement. Also a piece of news, Saratoga didn't have the specifics, but Naira saying yesterday that you can expect the same template for the summer season next year. So the 5 days, 8 weeks. So back it up from Labor Day and pick your weekends. Come for the whole meet. You can stay with us. No, wait a minute. Let me try. I better discuss that with Tina. We're going to discuss the international runners with Kelly Riley next. We're live at Santa Anita.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Come on, baby. Come on, girl. Come on, baby. Come on, girl. I love you, baby.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes in on Wednesday, midweek here, racing, of course, around the country. And Churchill today, by the way, nice, very nice card, and race that kind of caught my eye, the sixth, mile on the turf for two-year-old fillies. And most have actually had a start, the few firsters, Judmont, Heartspun filly, Trapezium. Looks interesting, and looks like she's working well for a debut. And, of course, Bill Mott has changed his M.O. And can pop with a firster after a long stretch when he couldn't. Racing picks up here tomorrow, and the Lure, restricted mile turf, is the feature. And there's a couple of good maiden. It happens to be a interesting maiden race. There's two-year-old fillies going a mile on the main. So things starting to pick up toward the weekend. And you can pick up Kelly Riley's voluminous analysis of the international participants. And nobody combs through these international horses to find every bit about them like Kelly does. And then she feels compelled to just communicate everything. It's like the information has to come out of you, Kelly, and get down on paper. 30 pages worth of insights. Good morning.
Good morning. So happy to be on to discuss the internationals with you for Breeders' Cup.
Kelly, I got to ask, how much of the research, because it's not possible to just get the pre-entries on last Monday. You're obviously tracking the international horses all year long, and we've talked other times, and we've talked about your reports for Ascot and for Dubai, etc. But how many horses are you tracking as we approach the pre-entries, and then, you know, how much of that work then is augmented after the pre-entry day?
Well, it would be much easier and probably prolong my lifespan if I really were on top of every single horse going into pre-entries. But the truth is there's so much else that I have to do and cover and be involved in that I really do feel like I'm playing catch-up a lot. And obviously I'm watching the marquee meetings, you know, in Europe and keeping tabs on the major developments over there and you know, seeing how the divisions are shaping up. So certainly I'm monitoring it, you know, to a certain extent. But when it comes to, like, really getting in the weeds on these horses, I really am, you know, it's round the clock, like, for the last, like, week and a half, just, you know, going back and watching replays and really, you know, digging in and, you know, looking up old news reports and everything. So, you know, there is, you know, part of it is just kind of, you know, keeping the pulse as the season goes. But honestly, it would be a lot easier if I could just, you know, immediately say, oh, yes, you know, I remember that horse from 3 months ago. But I mean, occasionally there will be something that, you know, as I'm watching a race live during one of the marquee meetings that I will kind of make like a mental note about a horse. Like, you know, one of the perfect examples really is like in a juvenile turf sprint with, you know, Alligator Alley. He's 12-1 in there in the morning line, I believe. And I happened to, you know, I was watching the Molcom, you know, the morning he was running in that because it was during Glorious Goodwood. And I just saw the nightmare trip he got. And anybody who's a trip handicapper watching that race would immediately put him in the notebook because it was just, that stretch run was a total mess. It looked more like a rugby ball or something than a stretch run. And yet he still recovered to finish second to a really good filly named Liberty Beach. So when I saw that, I thought, ooh, I got to watch that Alligator Alley. So occasionally you might have a horse like that that stays in the mind if you happen to see him, you know, when it's happening. But more often than not, it's more a matter of just, you know, going back and doing a lot of the elbow grease in the lead up to Breeders' Cup.
And I am glad you started with the juvenile turf sprint because it is the place. It's kind of funny, zero international participation in the Saturday turf sprint, and yet, you know, half the field international participants in the juvies. And let's start there, Kelly. And I'm already getting nice notes from on Twitter. Somebody just sent, let me see who it is, and said, Mark Mustafa saying, tell Kelly this year's scouting report is outstanding. So there you go.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's the main thing. I really just want to provide as much information and some degree of analysis and opinion, but you know, my main mission is to provide the information and let the reader, you know, dictate, you know, pick some betting strategy from there. So I'm so glad that it's serving the purpose.
Well, and when you look at the juveniles, because there's such a funny circumstance around the history of the route races, where the fillies have been a very difficult assignment for the internationals as opposed to the boys. And when we look at the juvenile turf sprint, this is only the second official year. There has been some, you know, there was some tinkering. And actually, when they had the one that I think Hightail won, I can't remember if Euros came for that one. I didn't look at that chart. But give us a feel for this group, because they do feel, even with Wesley Ward a serious presence in the juvenile turf sprint, it does feel like these international participants have a big shot in here.
Yeah, definitely. With the leading international in there, Ali, you know, certainly is like a top-rate horse, and he won the Norfolk very impressively at Royal Ascot, even though the margin wasn't that big. He traveled really well through the race, quickened, and Frankie Dettori felt that he was kind of idling at the end to let Ventura Rebel come close to him, but the thing that really sticks out about that, not only did he really, you know, impress just visually in that race, but the fact that, you know, Dettori felt strongly that he wanted better ground, and of course the Norfolk was on soft ground, and then he has since come back and won the Flying Shoulders at Doncaster on, you know, on good going, and I thought he traveled better even in that race than he had on a soft ground at Royal Ascot. So if you're good enough to win a Royal Ascot race on a surface that's not quite your ideal, at least obviously coped well enough with it, but you know, if you can do that and you're looking for good ground, that is very much a positive for him. And also, his trainer, Simon Crisford, at the time of the Norfolk, he had said that he was really like a proper two-year-old type, like small and neat. And I think that's the other thing to try to look for, you know, with these juveniles, is it a horse that's already peaking at two, that this is basically as good as they're going to be, even if they're very good. They're not really, you're not quite looking ahead to next year with them and thinking they'll develop into something even more than what they've shown so far. If you look at a horse who basically looks like a straight two-year-old type, you know, speedy, precocious, that's probably going to be, you know, the type that's campaigned here. And that might explain also partly why the Europeans have a bigger presence in the juvenile turf sprint, because they're, you know, these horses are pretty much at their peak right now. So you're going to go swing for the fences or, you know, go for the big prize while you know that they're at the top of their game. And, you know, whereas with the turf sprint proper, you know, of course, the Europeans have still been shut out of that race. They still haven't managed to win it. And I think, you know, partly it's a case of, you know, you already know what the historical record is, so you're going to go over there and, you know, maybe not be at your best, you know, dazzling five furlongs around a turn. You know, whereas with the babies, they're still, you know, maybe they're not quite as as set as the older sprinters are, who've already accomplished. You're so used to just going down the straightaways in Europe. It's a totally different ballgame you're going on at Earth.
Well, and that's, and there's two aspects of this that I want you to address. And it doesn't, it isn't just about this particular race. It's about Euros in general. A 5 furlong turf sprint, obviously, you blow the brake here, you've got problems. And in one note that you've seemed consistent amongst these starters, and these horses all are really experienced. I mean, you've got these six participants have made it 5, 8, 9, 6 starts, you know, compared to, you know, a lot of the domestic runners that are making typically a third, fourth, and maybe even a fifth start. But I saw, as I read, how often you talked about the horses that didn't break well, and the Euros come over here, and it's very typical that they do not get out of the gate the way our horses do. And of course, you know, we've got the Lucases and Bafferts that basically came from quarter horse backgrounds, Brett Calhoun, etc., that really drill their babies to break running. And how much of a compromise or how badly compromised are these two-year-olds in a spot like this if they don't get out of the gate?
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, you pretty much can't catch up. You know, it really is extremely difficult. And that's, I mean, partly you can try to, you know, you can try to address that by, you know, preparing them, knowing that they're going to have to break better. But, I mean, habits, and of course, just being two-year-olds, in general, you know, you can never tell especially on a big occasion, they might get distracted or, you know, whatever. So you can never be sure if they're going to break, even if they've, you know, been prepared to. That's like, how often does Baffert say, even going into any big race, gosh, I just hope he breaks well. So, that's just part of the aspect of the gambling dimension, is that you're hoping that they at least get off to a reasonable beginning. And that's one thing that I thought, also to go back to Ali, I thought was another point in his favor, that Simon Clifford specifically brought him to Wolverhampton for a workout, that he could get used to navigating a turn at speed, knowing that he's going to have to do that here. So I think that's one of the things that the horsemen can try to be proactive and just get them in the mindset of something they're going to have to do that they didn't do before.
The other part of this, and you talk about negotiating the turn, and the turn comes up quick, obviously, in a 5 furlong turf sprint. And about, what, I think half of these have run on the straight, including Ali, and then the other half, including, let's see, Dr. Simpson, he had a left-hander, so did Dream Shot. Band Practice, who seems very interesting, Band Practice has only run on the straight. Same with Alligator Alley. How do you typically treat this when it comes to, you know, making the transition from the straight to the turn?
I would, and this is where it gets more into trying to extrapolate from watching them in the races. Yeah, I think that so much of it just depends on the individual, that, you know, with Alligator Alley adding blinkers here, you know, that might make him a little bit sharper, more responsive, possibly. With Band Practice, she's looked like a work in progress, where she just looks still really green in her first few races, and that's like, to me, with her, she looks just like she really has like loads of speed being drawn on the inside. Like, gosh, I hope she really, you know, can navigate that turn real well, because she looks like, you know, the first few races, she was trying to basically coordinate herself. And of course, with 2 year-olds growing and changing and developing, you know, maybe she's fine by now. But that was the one thing that stood out to me watching, you know, her past races, where she just looks like she has a huge engine and she was still trying to figure out how to use it.
The six, so that everybody knows who we're talking about: Band Practice for Archie Watson, and James Tate's got Dream Shot, as well as Alligator Alley for Joseph O'Brien, Tom Dascombe with Dr. Simpson, and then further outside, Ali, Simon Crisford, and going to be vying for favoritism with Wesley Ward's four-wheel drive. And then King Neptune, Aidan O'Brien. Some thoughts about what we've, which of these six, why don't you rank them up and down?
Well, I think Ali has to, you know, be ranked top of the internationals, you know, based on his, you know, his superb record. I went ahead and put the scouting reports in general. I've kind of ranked them by order of preference as I was going along, so that
okay.
gives some insight. Again, of course, there's, you know, some, you know, kind of hair splitting there where it could have gone either way, and I decided to go one way or the other. But generally speaking, I, you know, had Ali first, and then Alligator Alley second. I kind of wrestled with band practice versus dream shot because it's, dream shot is really interesting since he's really come on of late, and obviously his form through, you know, having a fast closing second to Ali and the Flying Childers, you know, was rock solid effort on his part. And the Mercury the last time at Dundalk, you know, he had like a bit of a traffic issue trying to get clear in the stretch before he was flew late. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, I would prefer him to Dr. Simpson, even though she won that race and she was getting a huge weight pull from her elders. And just looked like she worked out the best trip in that race. And, you know, here, if Greenshot had a better stretch run, you know, maybe he gets up or maybe he'll make it a lot closer, you know, I would think. So that's why I ended up, I have Greenshot ranked over Dr. Simpson for that reason. Band practice, I think it really depends on her, I mean, say mental situation, but she ran, you know, she put it all together last time in France. She looked much more like the finished article. So if she continues that progress, and she does have good speed, so if she can break well, get herself in position, you know, drawn well on the inside, you know, I can definitely see her being involved. So she is extremely interesting. It's just the fact of, you know, this, again, is a filly who had been, you know, figuring things out, and this is asking a totally different thing of her just while she's getting the hang of what she was doing before. So that's my, you know, my only hang-up with her, because otherwise she does look like a, you know, a really talented horse. I know Archie Watson has been, you know, very high on her, expects her to run really well. So she makes, you know, from that standpoint, she makes, you know, a lot of sense. King Neptune is kind of, you know, he's obviously, you know, well-bred, you know, looked good on debut, you know, for O'Brien. And then, of course, as he took some class hikes along the way, he had, like, some losses that kind of made you go back and think, well, gee, maybe, you know, maybe he's not, you know, going to end up being among the leading lights over there. But then, he, you know, last time in the middle park, he turned it around, or even though he was fourth, he showed really good speed to lead in that race, and that was, you know, a vintage renewal. And he just got, you know, passed late, relegated to fourth, going 6 furlongs at Newmarket. So clearly, you know, he did really well to lead there for so long before getting, you know, overtaken 66-1. But he's drawn further out as well, 11, I think he's in 11. And O'Brien has said that he might have to be ridden more quietly. I mean, they're still sorting out tactics, so I don't want to, you know, say that definitively. But he was kind of thinking out loud that maybe they would, you know, take him back a little bit because he was drawn farther out. So that would obviously be a totally different dimension for him as well. So my main thing with him is that, you know, if you look at the middle part form, just the bare form line, it's like, well, a horse who can show speed there and get passed by, you know, serious animal weights, you know, from a form perspective, you think he should stack up well here, but it all goes to, you know, how are they going to handle specific circumstances that are assigned on the day, and that's why I'm more, you know, hesitant about what he can do there.
Well, the juvenile turf sprint starts the 14 races, and if I had to say to you a Euro winner here or a domestic winner?
I would be inclined to go domestic only because Kamari, you know, to me, looks, I mean, her run in the Queen Mary at Royal Ascot was just superb, just being outstayed in the end by Raffle Prize, you know, who ended up being a top, you know, two-year-old filly in England. So I would think that if the ground hadn't gone against Kamari that day, I think she probably wins the Queen Mary. I'm not sure, much as I love Raffle Prize, you know, she was going back to 5 furlongs that day, and I think the fact that the ground was soft kind of helped her outstay Kamari at 5. I'm not sure she would have beaten Kamari in a good ground 5 furlongs, so from that standpoint, I think that form, you know, is stellar. Even, you know, she's, you know, domestically trained, but she has, you know, tremendous, you know, international form through Royal Ascot. So I would be inclined to give Tamari the edge there, but, you know, with you know, total respect for Ollie, and I do think Alligator Alley is going to, you know, outperform his odds and run, you know, run a really good race. I think it would be like 12-1, I think.
Nice.
So that would be my general thought there. But, you know, again, with a 2-year-old, a different rate of development, and who knows, that is, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, no matter what happens in there, frankly.
Well, and that's, you know, part of that is goes with any turf sprint where, you know, the whether it's jostling and whether it's the brake and tangles, you know, into the turn, tangles coming out of the gate, you know, the horses get compromised immediately, you know, especially in a big group. But I just wanted to get a read on that front. I want to get into Saturday, and let's touch, though, for a second on the boys and girls race. The juvenile turf is kind of funny. The juvenile turf has been a better and more productive event for international participants. You think about, poor Line of Duty. And Mendelssohn hit it a bomb. Hootenanny outstripped. George Vancouver pounced. And Donna Vitam. And yet, for whatever reason, only two international invaders involved in the 14. Aiden O'Brien sends Arizona, who appears very serious in here, and then the longer priced Fort Myers, neither drew well for the mile voyage. 5-2 on Arizona, 12-1 on Fort Myers, with Moore and with Lorden from the 12 and 13 hole. How compromised is Arizona by this draw?
Well, it's obviously something you'd rather not see. I do think that if there is, you know, a European that can overcome that, especially as a 2-year-old in juvenile turf, I would think he can, because he does have good speed. So I do think that he will. He can work out a trip from there. So it's obviously not ideal, and, you know, especially at the, you know, at the price, you'd rather not be, you know, saddling extra expectations on a horse who's already going to be short enough in the betting anyway. But, I mean, to me, I just keep going back to his maiden win that was on a quick surface, and it was, I mean, he not only did he show, you know, fine speed to be close up early, but it was just the way he skipped over the surface and drew off just basically under a hand ride that it looks like that, like, to me, the surface is what's going to, you know, bring out the absolute best in him, because he just had this beautiful action over a quicker surface. And, you know, at Royal Ascot in the Coventry, to me, it's like he won that pretty much on class, because the ground, I mean, it wasn't as soft as it got later in the meeting, but it probably was a little bit slower than ideal for him. And, you know, when he was next meeting in France, the ground was just awful. So that's a total, you know, I mean, he did well to kind of plug on, you know, just showed some, you know, good attitude, good resolve to just keep going on a surface he was clearly not suited by. And, you know, last time in the Dewhurst, which has been, you know, at least in terms of European preps, that has been the key stepping stone to the juvenile turf for European winners, he really did well, you know, showing the way, and then Pinatubo, you know, passed him, which was, you know, expected. But instead of, you know, finishing way behind him as he had at the Cara, he was a lot closer to him at Newmarket and the Dewhurst. He was able to, you know, just plug on for, you know, a very good, clear second. And again, on ground that wasn't to his preference. So to me, it's like we could finally see, you know, Arizona do his best work in a while, because he's gonna enjoy it out there. So that to me is, you know, kind of offsetting a little bit of a concern about tactics, because I do think he's the type, not only the form in the book, and, you know, as I wrote in Scotting for, I use the expression, he checks all the boxes for the race. So I think if there is one who can overcome that kind of less ideal situation, I think he would. And Fort Myers had looked sneaky to me until the draw, because he is, you know, better than appears fourth to Arizona in the Coventry. He's been running well since then in defeat in group races, and then he bounced back last time at Dundalk in the Star Appeal. And the interesting thing there was that Donica O'Brien, who'd ridden him that day, felt that he was better around a turning track. So So that kind of made a mental note for me. It's like, oh, let's, you know, Fort Myers might be really interesting in the juvenile turf, and then he draws even worse than Arizona. So yeah, I would be a little bit more worried about him trying to deal with that than I would for his favorite stablemate. But on form, at least, just on paper, Fort Myers looked really interesting going in and full draw. So that's the kind of thing where you basically have to gauge your own risk level and whether you want to kind of, you know, turn a blind eye to that and just think, well, he's on paper, he looked reasonable. But.
Well, the Phillies, this is a much more complex picture, and I don't necessarily want to get into Saturday, but you look at this race, and O'Brien has yet to win one. Miguel Delzon won with Flotilla going back to Santa Anita in 2012. Charlie Hills with Cresilium. But O'Brien seeking his first on the boys' side, he'd be going after win number five. But there is a very nice assortment of fillies in this. And this feels like one of the weekend's most interesting races. Jesse Harrington, Albina, Daya getting plenty of attention, and I think a lot of people excited about her. And Andrew Balding, who I respect, brings the no-name never filly, Shaden, in. And the three of them all feel, I didn't even get to Tango and Etoile, the two O'Briens. Rank this group. Who's got the best shots to win out of that group?
I would think of the Europeans, I think Daya is the one who looks like she's just best suited to the circumstances, because she has, you know, a nice turn of foot. Again, another type that looks like really like a handy two-year-old type. And you know, the fact that, she's never been out of the top two, and the only two fillies who've beaten her are Raffle Pies and O'Brien's Love, so in major races. So I think she's, you know, definitely a solid type who's, you know, who's going to enjoy the, you know, the circumstances of this race, and is coming up to it in good heart and probably, you know, probably at her peak. Albina is a little bit of a question for me, not because, I mean, she's looked, you know, terrific. Her three wins have all been terrific, so that's not in any way to, you know, question her ability. The thing is that she's, in her first two wins, she just took a while to get going. Say that a little bit more clearly. She surged, you know, quickly, but it took like a deep stretch for her to do it. So even though she accelerated smartly, it was a bit more of a, she looked beaten before she finally got up on the line. Last time in the Prima Selby stock on the ARC undercard, she won really, really handsomely that day. But of course, the ground was soft. She doesn't need that. But she was racing only against French fillies on soft ground, and basically, you know, with her being such a strong closer, she won the slog. She outstayed the filly who'd been leading, and she was past her and just basically outstayed her, you know, pretty comfortably. So from that standpoint, you know, again, on paper, you know, she brings a very strong record, but then you try to, you know, extrapolate from what she's shown in Europe. You try to think of her on a two-term out of Santa Anita. Is she gonna be able to pick up quickly enough, or is she going to, you know, find the wire coming a little bit too soon for her? So that's my only hesitation on her. In terms of the O'Briens, Etoile to me was another one that I'd been kind of waiting for all season, after she broke her maiden in a group three. I mean, O'Brien put her on debut in the May Philly sprint, and she just looked, you know, incredible that day. And considering that she had not raced yet, and, you know, O'Brien's even was usually in need of one to bring them on, even just in regular maiden company, the fact she was in this group three on debut and still showed, you know, poise, athleticism, won pretty smartly. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, can't wait to go back to Alaska. Well, unfortunately, she had a setback. She wasn't seen again until Chivalry Park, you know, late September. And obviously she needed that race, you know, for all kinds of reasons. And she ran eighth. So on paper, again, that looks, you know, pretty iffy. And so is she going to move forward off that comeback? But the question is, you know, this is another thing on a filly that's basically been playing catch up. And I think she has a world of talent, but you know, this almost looks like she's here for the experience to try to bring her on going into next year. But you know, I travel from a talent, like a horse to follow basis. Yeah, I think I'm really excited about her, but you know, this is a tough spot, you know, considering what kind of season she's had after that sparkling debut, and you know, and she draws the far outside. So I mean, that's like, if she wants experience, well, she's gonna get it there. So that is definitely a concern. Tango has been, you know, O'Brien used the word babyish, you know, during the season. She was still kind of, you know, getting the hang of things. And she put it together, you know, last time in the Legacy, but that was back down to 6 furlongs, you know, lesser company, and you know, soft ground. She basically, you know, sluiced up. But again, this is a totally different kind of situation. And, you know, there are others that would have been, you know, stronger candidates here who weren't able to do it. So to me, it's like she's kind of tossed in here because she finally got going, you know, finally put it all together last time, so she earned her way in for a shot. But yeah, I'm not quite sure about, you know, her stacking up with the principals. And for the others, Shaden is, you know, she's certainly, you know, is a real hard trier in the sense that, you know, you can see that she really had to dig in to beat the boys last time, you know, in France. Her other stakes when they come versus males as well. It's just that her better form is on your rain-affected track, going shorter. So it's just another case where it's an entirely different kind of animal that she's in now. And the other thing is that whenever I can sometimes get a little too sidetracked by connections and pen, and I can, you know, overanalyze. If anybody writes like 30 pages on it, you can see I tend to get I can easily overanalyze things. But another thing with Shaden is the fact that her original connections were thinking of putting her away for the year. They really weren't entertaining another spot, you know, or this spot. And it was after she was privately acquired by Katsumi Yoshida that she then was entered in the Breeders' Cup. So it's a change of ownership that looks like it has prompted this. So that's another, you know, question mark for me about her. And
Fair enough.
And that one they're living in the past is... upset the Lowther. Upset the Lowther at York, and she hasn't been past 6 furlongs yet. So she's another one that, you know, has accomplished something already, and you know, brings, you know, useful, you know, effort in the Cheveley Park, where she was, you know, she did, you know, she kind of hung on for fifth. Tango and she were kind of, you know, together at the end, you know, trying, you know, fighting over fourth and fifth, and Tango just edged her. And she showed speed that day as well before, you know, it's just the pace was a little too hot that day. So she's another one that is, you know, on paper she has accomplishments to her credit, but then this is, again, a difficult, you know, to go from the 6 furlongs to a mile in really good company. I'm, you know, just not quite sure how she can handle that. And Unforgettable surrounded the last one. On the upgrade for Joseph O'Brien, I think her effort in the Silver Flash at Leopardstown was really interesting a couple starts back, because she split the two, Love and So Wonderful, who ended up finishing first and third in the Moyglare. So that form, that interlocking form, kind of makes Unforgettable interesting. But again, she's another one that's kind of, you know, trying to put it together at this point, and is this a little bit too soon for her? Because she's actually a May foal, so she might be the type who's actually going to be better in time than she is right now.
Well, Albina, the only one that of the international mile victory, or has even been a mile, the rest have not been beyond 6 and 7 furlongs. So that's always part of the equation, and I always discuss it when we talk to Nick Luck. I always like, you know, Nick's take on which kind, you know, looks like a traveler that is going to appreciate the mile. Let's hit a couple of highlights on Saturday before we finish. And Kelly Riley with us, just a fabulous 30-page report that discusses every single Euro and international visitor, because Blue Chipper comes back home to the United States, bred by Richard Mandela, and is going to participate in the Dirt Mile. Had a pretty sprightly 34 and change blowout yesterday, where Flavian Pratt didn't have to ask him. Out of curiosity, Kelly, what's your opinion about the Korean Invader?
Well, you know, this is, he is really a classic example of why it can be so helpful to actually watch the replays, because just on paper, your gut reaction would be like, a Korean shipper, chases his biggest class test, coming in British Cup Dirt Mile, he's got to be up against it. But if you actually watch his races, he travels just like an absolute dream. He's just drawing off like by a pole and winning easily, and the fact that you're on that kind of sandy surface, he broke the track record for a mile, like 1:36, and the fact that he's just doing it so effortlessly and basically being wrapped up on, and he's got such such a nice pedigree, by Piz now from a good family, and Kentucky bred, so it's like he's. The fact that he RNA'd at Keeneland in September and got acquired by a Korean interest, went over there. If he could very easily have sold to a different owner and had a entire different career trajectory over here. So from that standpoint, it's like he's showing a really, really high level of ability there. Now, of course, it's anybody's guess once you put them in this entirely different scenario. But all I can say is that he looks like he has a tremendous amount of raw ability. And I wouldn't be shocked if he like hangs on for a part of being involved in the exotics. I think it would be a bit of a leap of faith to see him toppling this field, but certainly just from what he just gives off the vibe of a horse who's really a class apart from on the circuit where he is.
Yeah, so. I had no, real interest until seeing him in the flesh and watching him, kind of zip around here. And you can, at xbtv.com, you can watch that work from yesterday and Gallops as well. And speaking of Gallops, War of Will out here, as well as Seeking the Soul, getting ready for the Classic. Kelly, we're going to come up to the top of the hour, and I really don't want, by the way, folks, if you've got the Brisnet handicapping package, this is part of it. And if you're not typically a Brisnet user, for $10, I don't even see how that's possible that Kelly did this work, and it's only $10. So that let me slip that in, and you can get it at the links or at Brisnet and at the Twin Spires as well. And let's hit just one. I want you to discuss one horse that is a bit of a new face or a mystery coming in to the other three turf races, the Filly and Mare Turf, the Breeders' Cup Mile, and the Breeders' Cup Turf. And I'm going to actually throw it out at you and get your reaction. Fanny Logan, she also drew poorly. She's in the 12 hole for John Gosden, who does not come here, just to sightsee, and Frankie Dettori gets aboard, and she's a three-year-old facing elders, and she just has a quality look to her. What's your Fanny Logan take?
Yes, I agree. I think also the fact that Gosden has been has such top three-year-old fillies this season that it's also been a case of placing them where they can do the most good. And the fact that she's by See the Stars, his progeny tend to get better with maturity. So she's very much on the upswing. And I think if she'd been in a different yard, possibly she would have been in higher profile races throughout the season, because she did try the Ribblesdale, and that was like the only poor race of her life in Alaska. And she had, when she got a few confidence boosts and most recently won the Pride at Newmarket. So she's very much on the upswing, and she is sneaky, because of the pedigree angle. She comes from a fantastic pedigree as well, aside from the Sea Stars on top. Dam is a half to Hunter's Light, who was such a good campaigner for Godolphin, and it's the family of Too Darn Hot. And so it's I think it's her third dam to the foal to a Darshan, so it's just a superb dam. So she's bred, she certainly got the pedigree going for her, and the fact that she's on the upswing, kind of like lower key venues. But as you said, she really does have a look of one who's been ready for a class hike, and I do think she's going to run, you know, run well. And I can definitely see her, you know, hitting the board at, you know, at a price. I think that. And the things that Iridescent to me looks like, you know, she is like the most accomplished, like the total package among the Europeans, from her Group One form, and her only race in a mile and a quarter was the Pretty Polly when she just pretty much blew by Magic Wand, who's an awfully solid yardstick. So I think Iridescent is really interesting at 8-1. Sister Charlie just looks, you know, extremely tough in here. She's going to get, you know, her ideal setup with her pacemaker in tow, and so I think it's going to take, you know, obviously a lifetime best from, you know, from any of these to try to beat her. But I think, you know, Iridescent is the one that brings kind of the most on paper to it. But I agree that Fanny Logan definitely is one that is in the mix for consideration to use, because I really do think she's coming up to this in a way that suggests she's going to continue her improvement.
Let me throw you this proposition. Is Mount Everest possible to finish ahead of Anthony Van Dyke in the turf?
I would think that would take more of a leap than I'd be willing to make, because I mean, Mount Everest is, again, like, to, you know, go back to, if you've watched a horse and you're kind of waiting for them to do something. Last year, when there was not much between him and Japan, and of course Japan's gone on to, you know, great heights, you know, this year with the Grand Prix de Paris and the beating Crystal Ocean, the Judmont. So last year, Mount Everest looked like he was going to beat Japan until like the last stride, I think it was the Beresford. And I've been waiting all season for Mount Everest to come back, and he was, you know, sidelined, and so he's had like a belated start to the season. But he certainly, you know, mentally, he wasn't quite there at two. I think last time out when he won, albeit soft ground, you know, it's not really applicable to what he's facing here. But he showed that mentally he was putting it together. So I do think Mount Everest can be in a race that otherwise looks awfully formful between, you know, Blitz and Mortar and Anthony Van Dyke. I do think if you're trying to get some value, you know, from a betting perspective, that I do think Mount Everest can hit the board in there at a pretty big price, because he's going the right way, you know, beautifully bred, the Galileo out of six perfections, and, you know, he's a horse that if he can make a similar improvement, you know, from 2-3 that Japan did, that puts him right in the mix. So the only thing is that, again, with his basically being on a crash course late in the season, you know, how much is this, you know, I think O'Brien said something about, you know, thinking about next year with him, everything. How much is this basically giving him more experience because he's been, you know, off, you know, missed the heart of the season. So, but I do, he's one of those that I've been looking forward to the entire year, and I do think he can run, you know, a very good race in there. But I think that, you know, it would be just to say that he can beat the Derby winner, who's been basically set for this race all along, I think is, yeah, I'm not quite that brave, but I do think he can run really well and faster at a price.
Well, for those that are, and we're going to talk pedigree next with Sid Fernando, you're talking about I would arguably as good a pedigree as any horse in this race, in this Breeders' Cup. Galileo, out of six perfections, and I'm sure a lot of people, including the Flaxman and the Niarchos family, have been waiting for Mount Everest. And he is a three-year-old, and nothing says, and he did, as you say, he didn't really start the season until September, so there's still upside, and I'm sure that, you know, there's potential, if not on Saturday, then down the road. But I also don't sense that this is a horse that they just bring here idly, Kelly. That's why I'm curious about Mount Everest. You're not going to bring him here to have him underperform. That's just the element of his participation that intrigues me.
Sure, and the fact that the Niarchos family being the breeder and co-owner as well, and you know how much they love the Breeders' Cup historically, had such terrific success at the Breeders' Cup. Now, that's another element to this, because there's also campaigned Circus Maximus in partnership with Coolmore in the Mile, and have Albania in the Juvenile Filly Circus we discussed. So there's certainly that Niarchos cachet to him, that they have such, I mean, their horses in the Breeders' Cup are just such a tremendous record, that that's something else definitely in his favor.
As we finish up with Kelly Riley, and already I'm getting requests, a reminder, BrizNet, and at the Twin Spires blog, there's links, and I'll send out a direct link for everybody to download the full report. And Kelly, you mentioned Circus Maximus. A quick thought about the Mile. Who's your top win candidate among the Euros, and who's your top price to maybe play with?
Well, from that standpoint, I think he's going to run a really good race, just because, I mean, he's got the form. He's just got the form in the book. He's a terrific campaigner, great heart last time, really good resolve last time to outdo Romanov. I'm a little bit worried about him. Not only the two-turn mile, I think, is a little bit quicker for a horse that really can go further. So I'm not quite sure if this were at a different venue that maybe might play more to his strength. I just think he's vulnerable to a horse with a superior turn of foot in this kind of situation. I would be surprised if he's, he should run well and be on the board, but I kind of think he's going to be a little bit vulnerable for somebody out kicking him late in this kind of condition. So I think that, there are a couple that, without parole at 20-1 for first up for Chad Brown, it's fascinating. He looked like he was going to be a mile superstar last year before everything kind of went off for him. So I think he's fascinating. He's obviously working really well with Brooks Mortar. So, that is a fascinating angle. I think the European, of course, is kind of an honorary year. I include him in the scouting report because this is his first start for Brown. So I have much more without parole in the scouting report. I think the other European that I think is really interesting at a price, although he drew badly, is Hey the Man.
Yep.
He actually was second to our Romanized in a very fast run on Minstrel, going 7 furlongs. He's more of a 7 furlong type, but again, if you have a horse who needs a mile in Europe, they're probably going to find things a little too quick going 2 turn mile 10 and 8. So. Whereas Hagenan looks like he's more the type that is going to, he has some sneaky good form, and he almost won the French 2000 Guineas last year. So he actually has some, he demonstrated some classic ability at going a mile 3. So I think he's really fascinating. Again, you have to cut, seeing the post, I think it was 13, I believe. Anyway, the post position was just like yikes for him. But I think that at a price, he's going to be totally overlooked. He gets the Tory. So if he's good enough, Dettori will try to work out the best possible trip for him if he's good enough to take advantage of it. But I think he's really interesting there at a big price.
Well, just and I'm sure when Rick Hammerly's with us tomorrow and Friday, he will reiterate several times, do not let the exterior posts throw you off a horse that you were on. And all we have to do is trot out Karakantai from 3 years ago from the 14 hole, and there's plenty other examples. If you like a horse like this, at least as an exotics candidate, don't be intimidated because he's going to launch from the 13. Kelly, this was wonderful as always. Best of luck in the Breeders' Cup. Again, we'll send out the link. In fact, I see where Ed just answered Tony Infante. Tony's going to be bidding to win the Breeders' Cup betting challenge. So maybe Kelly, he'll come on the show next week after he won the BCBC and say that it was your information that got him the $280,000 win.
Well, he would be clever enough to use it to best advantage, though. So that would definitely, if it helps him, that would be fantastic, but he would deserve all the credit.
Well, it'll help anybody that wants to get a complete understanding of the international participants in the Cup. Kelly Riley, everybody. Gallant Fox 1930 on your Twitter. Kelly, as always, a real pleasure. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks. You too.
I appreciate it. Kelly Riley, everybody. Just a passion for, you know, we say this all the time, whatever aspect of the sport that hooks you, it's the gambling, it's the pedigree, it's the pageantry, it's the international, in this case, whatever it is. For Sid Fernando, it's the pedigree. Sid's going to join us next. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And I see all kinds of people. Scott Hazelton got his hair cut. He's going to join us. Lenny Shulman, we won't even talk about a haircut regarding Lenny because it's hopeless. Joe Valenti is here. EPO Equine. Huh? Yeah, Joe hasn't woken up yet. And Scott Hazelton rolls around. Let's take a break, get Sid in here, and back with more at the races at the Cup.
The latest racing news.
It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait. With 14 challenging Breeders' Cup races, 5 Friday, November 1st and 9 Saturday, November 2nd, you've got to be ready. Kickstart your handicapping mojo with ExpressBet's free Breeders' Cup wager guide, available online at expressbet.com beginning Friday, October 25th. Get analysis, selections, price plays, and $100 wagering strategies for every Breeders' Cup race from expert handicappers and broadcasters, plus oodles of informative stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. XBTV's Jeff Siegel, At the Races radio host Steve Bick, NBC Sports analyst Nick Luck, and multiple Eclipse Award winner Dick Girardi anchor a powerful team of guide experts. NBC Sports analyst Eddie Olchek and retired sportscaster Brent Musburger of VSiN will contribute to a revised guide version available beginning Thursday, October 31st. Go to expressbet.com now. Open an account, get the free guide, and play Breeders' Cup.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4646.
Back at the races. 15 into hour two. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale.